Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Cindy, one of the questions, I'm sure you get it all the time, I get it all the time from folks I see in restaurants. How do people turn out restaurant quality food at home? So I thought we should sort of explore that.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the factors that can either help you do it, or what are the things that can't be done?
Well, the factors are definitely what equipment you have, whether it's small pieces of equipment, whisk and tongs, you know, food processors and mixers, all the way up to your stove, your hood system, and what sort of tables and workspaces you have in your kitchen, to product availability. And frankly, I also define the three categories into labor.
Yeah.
So what's your labor situation at home, which is obviously tremendously different from that of a restaurant.
So let's break down those different areas.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with equipment. Let's start with the big stuff and go to the little stuff.
Sure.
The big stuff, immediately I think of firepower.
I agree.
If I've got to cook in somebody's home kitchen, that is my first terror. My first terror.
The word fear comes into my head when you say cooking in someone else's kitchen, but yes, exactly. And do they, well, let's start with the fact that do they have an electric stove or do they have a gas stove?
Exactly.
So that's the first terror.
Do you remember having to do that? We did that competition for all the county executives and the mayor a couple of years ago for fundraiser.
Yeah, on propane and burners.
And you know my cooking. You know my cooking. What do I need more than anything else?
Oh, you need high heat.
Okay,
you
and they give us this propane burner.
I've cleaned many a Tony Foreman pan that I thought I was never going to be able to clean again or use again because it was high heat.
You want to get a proper mark on
something. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Right?
Yeah, and
I saw
also
this
there
thing.
Better be a,
big, like,
a
oh
good
my
vent
God.
If Tony Foreman is cooking in your house. Yeah. Or open all the windows. Turn off the smoke detector.
Yeah. Or just build a big fire outside.
But it's true. And that's fine. I mean, that's you know, that's just the way you cook. So
but
it's all right. You don't have a choice. I mean, we've had houses where we had electric stoves. I mean, you know, our first house had an electric stove. It was from the 1960s. And I mean, you know, we didn't have the money to do anything about it. So that's what you use, you know, and people don't have choices. So you have to figure out how to use what you have.
Now
I have a beautiful range and I'm super thankful for it. And it has five burners. Now, I could have done a much bigger stove, but in the end, I don't really need more than five burners at home.
That's plenty for
That's a lot.
That's plenty for home. One big oven that takes a full sheet pan is,
oh my gosh,
to me, plenty for home.
And that's really nice to have. To be able to, especially since we are so used to working in, or I am so used to working in a commercial kitchen, I really like using my sheet pans. I mean, I'm used to that. I've been doing this forever. And to use a cookie sheet or some other form of a sheet pan that home cooks have to use, doesn't work for me. So yes, I was lucky enough that the old stove that was in my house when I bought my farmhouse, it was in good shape. There was nothing wrong with it. It was one of those glass top electric ranges. But you know what? I have that as backup, and I had room to put it in my pantry. So I am really thankful to have that thing, because when I have a party, I have my beautiful, you know, La Cornue stove that has five burners, two with super power, and two that actually can go down to really nice low power, low flame. And I have this backup stove that has, I can put a full sheet pan in, that has four more burners on it that I can hold stuff, you know, I can use as a
battery. It's really the oven that you use.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice to have a second oven. I don't have cabinets in my kitchen, so to put a wall oven in would have made no sense in my kitchen, and I don't want a wall oven, so I literally would have had to have put in a second stove or double size stove to get the second oven in. So I'm really lucky it worked out that way.
So firepower is one of the things you think about, and some people have grills outside, some people don't have grills outside.
Oh, but gosh, that's another. I mean, what an advantage to have a grill outside. It just gives you one more place to cook. Or to even, you know, I mean, you can use it for anything. You can hold things on there. If you need to, you know, hold a pan of barbecue or a pan of braised short ribs or a pan of roasted corn or a side dish. I mean, not only can you cook on it, but it's a heating surface, so you can, and it has a lid on it, which is fantastic. You just put some foil over your food, and there you go. You can do good. Well, and those often now they have burners on them, which is great. So it really, I mean, if you're having a big party, to have that is a huge advantage to have a grill outside.
But I think that firepower is that first question, you know, and not everybody wants to make the commitment to that kind of thing. So that someone doesn't have giant firepower.
No, you just have to do the best you can. I mean, even with a good electric stove, you can get a pan really hot. I mean,
it's heavy pans.
Yes.
Heavy enough pans.
Well, and are your pans good conductors of heat? That's what you're getting at. Yeah.
Is it, you know, that copper is important.
If you can afford at least one or two copper pans, man, with stainless steel lining, it's huge. They're great. And that's the thing you like to burn the hell out of, is a good copper pan.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do. Well, you like to get the pan very, very hot.
Yeah.
And you can. You're not going to hurt that
pan.
Well,
if you're going to cook a large piece of meat and get a sear on it, you're going to have to get that pan pretty darn hot.
And a steel pan is the other thing. Yeah. You can get extremely hot, and you will not hurt that pan. As long as you don't pop any of these pans in a sink full of soap water when they're hot, you're going to have really good luck with these pans, as long as you don't bang them around.
A lot of the world is aluminum and Teflon coated. And those are not.
I would love to know what percentage of people use Teflon coated pans at home. If that really is, you know, popular, because, I mean, I get it, but I wouldn't. I mean, you want to have it for certain things, but even still, if you just have a hot pan with good fat in it, your food's not going to stick as long as you clean your pans properly and don't ruin the surface of the pan by using a steel pad on them. If you use a green pad, you're going to be able to get that pan clean and without, you know, abrasively ruining the surface, being abrasive with the surface, yeah.
Yeah.
Or even like, what is it called, Barkeep? There are a couple of different powders that you can use, and those things will, you know, they're abrasive, but they're not as bad as putting steel on steel, which is what you're doing with, you know.
Scratching it with the wire.
Yeah, exactly. So, but we were talking about equipment, so. And a good hood system. I mean, I just cooked at Easter at my mother's house. I was home that Sunday.
Well, hood system meaning ventilation.
Ventilation. Oh my gosh, her ventilation recirculates back into the house, and she was cooking.
That's the craziest thing that frustrates me. I mean, I have a good restaurant range with good firepower, and good oven. The other thing I was going to mention besides pans is an oven thermometer. Do you actually know what temperature your oven is?
That's big.
If you're a baker, you have a serious baker, especially in your house, you can't get results.
Well, they
without,
only cost a couple of dollars. Just put one in
your oven. But a good oven thermometer is
and
really
you don't even
important.
Have to leave it in there. You can just put it in when you feel like, oh, I better check that, and then you take it out and put it in the drawer.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're a couple of dollars, and that's a good point, Tony. That's you have to know the temperature of your oven. But with a hood, you know,
with ventilation, I mean. That's the one thing, and I have what's supposed to be a worthwhile ventilation system, but it's obviously a home system.
Uh-huh.
And there's no, like, I'm going to listen to fire alarms in my house every time I sear a piece of chicken.
Oh my gosh, me too.
Yeah, I have to open the kitchen door regardless of weather conditions.
Yes.
Just to get enough air.
I have the same
to
problem.
To not listen to the beep, beep,
yeah, it
beep,
goes, hey,
beep.
Mine goes off when I make toast, and I like golden toast.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm just making toast, and the fire alarm's going off. And my poor cat. I think it pierces his eardrums.
I have a three-year-old.
Oh,
you know?
Well, no, all of us. That's everyone is affected by it. It's horrible. I mean, they're going to get you out of bed.
Daddy,
that's
is
sure.
the alarm going to come off? I'm like,
yeah,
oh,
oh
my
boy.
God. Go outside and play, please.
So does your hood vent into your house, or does it vent outside?
It vents outside. It just doesn't have
draw
enough pull.
Well. Huh. Well,
it doesn't have
bad.
Enough pull. And
mine
I think
does.
I think that's because at home, they try not to screw up your air balance for the house.
Okay.
So they only pull so much air out.
Mine does a really good job, I'll tell you. I love it. I mean, if I turn that thing
questions.
On high, it's all out of there. It's and you know, if you're, I almost never cook seafood at home. I just hate the smell of it in my house. Or if I do, I'm going to grill it and do it outside. But man, I mean, even with seafood, it will pull. So that's just a big deal.
And what did you do?
What do you mean?
For the ventilation.
Oh, it's the same as the stove.
Okay.
It's the same. line. It's the same line.
So it actually works.
It really works very well.
Unlike mine.
And it has good lighting in it too, which is nice. And the hood and the vents are easy to clean, so that's nice too. I mean,
that's
they pop right out, and you put them in the. And I have a gigantic.
Well,
okay,
you
that,
have to,
talking
you,
about equipment. That's the other thing, is that to me, for the first time in my home life, I have a gigantic commercial sink in my house. That to me is one of my favorite things in my house.
Sink was next on my list.
Oh my gosh.
You can't actually wash any produce properly unless you have a big sink.
Exactly.
I wonder how many listeners go to their like laundry tubs when they get stuff from the farmer's market. To get things clean.
I bet a lot of people do because I'll tell you what, the sink that was in my house before, when I bought it, I mean, it was the most shallow sink I've ever seen. It was like 8 inches deep. I should have measured it before
That's
we took
crazy.
It out. I'm like, what? I don't even understand this.
It's a hand washing sink.
Right?
I mean, think about it. Like, you're ambitious. You want to pickle some beets.
Yes.
You know, and put them away.
Oh,
or,
yeah.
Like,
and they're sandy, and they have tops that are all a mess.
I mean, you're going to do 20 bunches of beets, and you go and you get them. You get like 9 beets in your sink. You know, and you also want to you want to scrub your sink too. That's the thing, is you need to use that sink,
right?
And people don't always, you know. I hope that they always take care of it. You know,
it's got to be very sanitary. Well, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, my mom, you know, had the two-sided sink. And then at some point they started doing the two-sided sink with the other side is like half as deep as the other side. I'm like, wait, I don't understand that. I just need a gigantic big sink, which is what I have. So I have, I mean, literally, I'm not exaggerating. I could get in there and take a bath if I had to. And I have a washboard on the left. So the cool thing about a washboard.
I can make no comment.
Having a washboard, meaning that I can scrub all my pots and pans on that washboard, and it has a big edge, so all the and it drains, of course, into the sink. It's just the greatest thing because you can, you know, and also for me being used to working in a commercial kitchen, I'm used to if I drop something on the floor, it's not the end of the world. You know, I can sweep it up.
Yeah.
It's a tile floor. I'm working on plastic matting. I mean, you know, I don't have to worry about anything.
People have carpets down.
Exactly. And at home you have to, or maybe you have a nice wooden floor. You have a beautiful, you know, tile floor, or I don't know, you have something.
Yeah, I have a
Most
nice
people
wooden
at home
floor.
Are worried
I have to
about.
Sweep it and mop it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have a wooden floor, and I'm scared every time I get water on it from my sink. So it's really nice to, you know, just that's the great thing about working in a commercial kitchen. You know, I can put a hot pan on a stainless steel table. I can, you know, you can just do anything. You don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, that's
the
next thing in my line after firepower, you know, ventilation and pans is work surface. And this is, I think, where home kitchens usually have a ton of square footage of work surface, but they're often covered with all kinds of stuff.
And I will use my sister as an example. When I first really started going to her house, maybe like at Christmas time, and then she would you cook dinner? I'm like, sure, if you remove everything from your countertop. I mean, they're like flowers. I mean, back in the day, they were like plastic flowers. You know, those were in style, or dried flowers. They were like everywhere. And there were things everywhere. And I know it looked pretty,
people have their baking canisters.
Oh, God, I can't stand it. I mean, to me.
And I love cookies, but the cookie jar is also.
Well, and those things are all going to get dirty too, quite frankly. I mean, if you have cabinets, put them in there. If you have a pantry, put them in there, you know, or just store stuff. And I know we want some things at our fingertips, but mostly it's tools that you need at your fingertips. And you only need a few of those.
If you want to actually cook something, you need the workspace.
You do.
You need the workspace for the next thing on my list.
What's that?
A good cutting board.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay, now I'll go back to my family again.
Okay.
My mother has one of those, I don't know what they are, ceramic, glass, horrific things.
How are you supposed to cut something on glass?
I can only say that your knife is terrible for your knife.
Or something that's like almost like China.
Oh, yeah. You can't work on that sort of surface.
You're going to cut your...
I started buying my family things.
You're going to slice your fish on a
dinner plate?
I bought
my sister a cutting board. I bought my mom a cutting board. I'm like, even if you never use it, just have it here so when I come, I can work on it. I buy them knives.
I mean, besides rubber and wood.
I hope my family doesn't listen to this show.
Well, they might listen to the podcast, you know.
No chance.
But the odds of me sending a text message to your sister to tell her to listen to this particular podcast are very high.
Very high. No, but truly, I mean, what it comes down to is, you know, obviously I come from a perspective that's very different from a home cook, but it still makes sense
you
to
do,
me that
you
wouldn't
don't.
Have things all over your
work
surface.
Your mom and your sister to remind you.
I do, yes.
But
so
it's
just
yeah, it's
put
the,
it
it's
away.
Because people have, they have the space. But the mixer that they use twice a year is taking up the best spot.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
The coffee maker, put it in the corner. Give yourself good space around the sink. And you have to have an inflow to the sink and an outflow to the sink.
Yeah.
You know, dirty dishes can't go everywhere. They have to go in one spot. With cutting boards, besides rubber and wood, you know, like wood block, what else? Is there anything else that...
There was this.
I mean, I like my wooden boards.
I love, yeah, and I have several. I have several, and also because the only way to deal with cheese, if you're going to serve gross pieces of cheese, gross pieces is a.
You mean large pieces?
A
of
large
cheese.
Piece, right?
I think that's fantastic use of gross.
Well,
there.
That's how we talk in the kitchen.
Let's get to the next segment in a few moments, where we'll talk more about what are the things that you need in your kitchen to try to produce, you know, excellent restaurant quality food, and then remember in the future. The third segment, there will be a chef's challenge.
Look forward to it.
Very good. All of that on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Forman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're spending a little bit of time talking about what are the things that make it possible to do restaurant quality food at home. Mm-hmm. But you know, the thing we haven't really done is to say, well, if you don't have a commercial range, mm-hmm. or if you don't have a great big sink, or if you don't have heavy duty pans, that the pan thing, I don't think there is a variation.
Right, right.
You know, the firepower thing. The only thing I can think of is the thing I've had to do in those situations, which is choose dishes that are not going to suffer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I mean, as I was saying, I don't, you know, it's very nice to have a great range, but even, you know, everyday ranges can achieve what you need them to achieve. It's just maybe not quite as easy, but, you know, just think ahead and make sure that your burners are hot, and if it's an electric stove, that things are... You know, the biggest thing with working with electric versus gas is the obvious one, which is gas temperature changes at a touch of the knob, whereas electric is a slower change in temperature or, you know, increase in temperature. So
but if you have a heavy,
just have to think about it when you're cooking.
If you have a heavy pan in either situation, it's more consistent, and mm-hmm. you can move the pan off the electric burner.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's the thing that people sometimes... They're like they're trapped and they freeze. It's like the truck is coming. Ah.
Right. Well, I think you've hit it kind of nail on the head there. Obviously, I mean, you know, not everyone can afford a really expensive pan, but an expensive stove costs many, many thousands of dollars. An expensive pan may cost $125 or $200 or $300, you know, whatever.
Well, if you go get one big Le Creuset pan, one that's big enough at least to put a great big whole chicken in. Mm-hmm. If one that size is not a giant piece of money.
And that's a cast iron pan with enamel on the outside of it.
Right.
That is not a stainless steel pan.
No, but it will act like it's as easy to clean as a lot of Teflon.
Yes, they are pretty easy to clean.
It's heavy enough because of the cast iron that you can get a pretty darn good sear.
Yeah.
As long as you have some, you know, as
you
long as you.
You can do a lot with those pans.
As long as you, you know, get it hot. And then put your oil in it, and then put your protein in it, and you don't overload the pan.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I mean, to me, that's the one investment.
Either, yeah.
You can do an awful lot with that pan and just a home range.
Right, or if you can bite the bullet on a good stainless steel pan. I mean, copper is the one that costs, I mean, copper costs a fortune. You know, good stainless steel pans are expensive, but the biggest thing is that all the lines have, well, not all of them, but some of the lines have less quality in their line. You know, they have a range of prices. It's a range of quality, and how how thick is the metal? How many different metals are in the pan? How is the pan exactly made? How is the handle made? So, you know, if you can afford that, then even if you have an everyday stove, you can achieve a lot more.
It's funny. I was sort of thinking about, so what are the things that are the biggest deal when, if I go to my dad's house and cook, which is a very normal home kitchen.
Does he have a gas stove?
He has a gas stove with very little power.
Okay. Wow.
I mean, literally, like, it will make you drink heavily. It's so little power, if you're me anyway. yeah, God love them, but it's very tough.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, what are the things that are the only, what are the important things when I go to his house to cook? A heavy pan that, that I can actually get hot before I put food in it. Then they can take the heat. A cutting board so I don't slice my fingers off. That's a good cutting board. And a knife. That's the other thing we haven't mentioned. You have to have an excellent knife. One of the cool things is that people can learn how to sharpen a knife now just with a YouTube video.
Exactly. It's hard. It's not easy to do, and to be able to watch a video of someone doing it is extremely helpful, and then you just have to practice.
If you, right now it's asparagus season. Here's a pretty good test. If your knife is not sharp enough, if you hold up a thick spear of asparagus and you go to cut the end off, you should be able to hold it over the sink and just lop the end off, like, you know, just like you drawing with a knife, zip, zip. If you can't do that, your knife needs a lot of sharpening. I think that's not a bad
I think a lot of thumb. And well, and that's, you know, for home cooks, that's a great skill to learn. So, you know, your knives have to be sharp, your tools all have to be in good shape. It's
but a pan, a cutting board that's safe, and a good knife that's sharp can, I think that's got to be half of it.
Yeah.
That has to be half of what gets you there.
Well, yeah, and if your sink isn't huge, then you just, you know, I mean, you just have
it's
to.
Less convenient.
We can all adapt to what we have, and if we can afford to change something, then we just learn how to deal with it. That's all there is to it. I mean, but it's also nice to know what, you know, what your goal can be. Your goal should be if you can change things.
When I'm thinking about my great grandmother, she never had any kind of a fancy kitchen, but if she had a lot of stuff to wash, she got. Her galvanized wash basin.
Oh, that's funny. My grandmother had those too.
I think
too.
It probably cost her like $3. She'd pour pitchers of water into that guy.
That's awesome.
You know, and wash like collard greens and stuff. And like,
yeah.
Because you can't do much of anything in the home sink with those.
I think the other tools that are really helpful. I mean, you know, again, if you're working in a commercial kitchen, I've got a food processor on the shelf, a great blender on the shelf.
On the shelf, not the counter.
And that's, yeah, they're out of the way.
On the shelf, not the counter.
Yes. And a food mill, which is great to have.
On the shelf, not the counter.
Oh, my God. And a great blender. And those things are all at our fingertips. So, I mean, that's the next thing. I mean, about working in a home kitchen is, do you have those things? Do you need those things? And... you know, do you have a handheld mixer? You know, that's the difference between, you know, working in a commercial kitchen. We have all the things that we need at all times.
I'm now thinking about all the home blenders that I have fried the motor on
back in the day,
trying to get results out of it.
Right.
You know, well, that's one thing you kind of have to.
There are some great blenders out that they call the chef's power tools now. And there are some great blenders that one of the cool things about them is that they really do blend everything into oblivion. I mean, you don't lose product because they blend so well.
But you won't fry the motor on the
And they can handle it. And the other blender. thing is they have hot lids now, which is nice because also back in the day when I first started cooking, we used wearing blenders. I mean, that's what was in every kitchen.
And you had to
kitchen.
Hold a towel over
them. Oh, my gosh. You took your life in your hands when you were, you know, those were gallon blenders. Held a gallon of hot soup or, you know, 3/4 of a gallon of hot soup, and it was going to come out over the top if you weren't careful, and that was where your face was. I mean, yeah, and with the hot lids now, what it does is it allows the air to escape and the steam to escape. You know, it doesn't go over. So as long as you don't overfill them, never fill a blender more than 75% or even less is better.
The other hand tools that are a big deal,
well,
just little stuff. I mean, I would, what are the things that you use?
Well, I you know, now, and people, if you watch cooking shows, we've started to all use the little tongs. And I will admit, I used to make fun of people for using them. And we've started using them because there are certain instances.
You mean little science class tongs?
Yeah, there are certain instances where it does make sense to use the, I mean, you can't, in a commercial kitchen, you can't use those things all night long. There's no way.
But good tongs, regardless of, if you right. want to have a series of sizes, have a series of sizes, mm-hmm. but good tongs.
Yeah, and we buy heavy-duty stainless steel tongs. And, you know, again, going back to my mother, who I love and who is a great cook, but, you know, has had, and her tools, she's had since I was a kid. I mean, they're, some of them are probably 50 years old, quite frankly, to be perfectly
awesome.
Honest. Oh, totally. And they're made really well.
That's getting some miles.
Oh, yeah. They're made really well. So, you know, she has the old type of tongs. It's kind of hard to describe, but
it's like mom's slotted spoon with the blue flowers on the handle. That kind
no,
of thing,
they're metal that open their handles, they pull apart, and then they have like this weird triangle thing at the top. I don't even understand those tongs, but man, she knew how to use those. So, but I will say the one thing that I don't understand are these self-locking tongs. I will never forget the first time I went on to do national TV show in New York, and I didn't bring all of my own equipment, and I brought a lot of things, but I did not bring tongs with me, so I'd use their tongs. It was a live TV show, and I'm like, what are these self-locking tongs? I don't even understand the point of them. But anyway, so
I can see you sort of jerking around.
Oh, yeah.
With
I'm like, wait, here I am a professional chef, and I look like an idiot trying to get these self-locking tongs to work. I'm like, why do the tongs lock? I guess so you can store them. That's the only thing I can think is that, you know, because tongs obviously are always open if they don't do that. But anyway, so good tongs, good whisks, different size whisks are a big deal. And then also for us, we use all different types of spoons. So small spoons, there are actually a lot of old spoons from old silver patterns make perfect quenelles because they're just the perfect shape, which is really nice.
That's just it's the deeper, you know, sort of like what used to be called the cream soup spoon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That, you know, in the old pattern.
It's fun to find those old pieces in an antique store or something. And
okay, things I think about, one, because I make a lot of pasta, and two, because I peel a lot of vegetables, is a good peeler.
Mm-hmm.
And a microplane, not just a cheese grater.
Microplanes are fun.
Not just a cheese grater, but a good microplane. And if you want to do it and actually get, you know, a decent-sized surface area cheese, you have to get a decent-sized surface area microplane. If you only get a long skinny guy, you'd be grating Parmigiano for these six people for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, so, and then you have to decide if that's the grate you want for your Parmigiano.
The other thing with a pasta cook, this is my tangential thing, it's also incredibly valuable for a vegetable cook. I have a heavy pot that I can boil water pretty fast in. And I think even in my dad's, I can boil water pretty fast in. It's a pretty heavy pot. It has a basket the size of the pot that goes down in it or sits up on it. So
that's nice.
If you're going to take, you can take pasta, drop it in there.
And drain it.
And drain it. But you can put the top on, you know, when it's boiling, take the top off. You can shake the basket a little bit so things don't stick. You can drain it. I mean, honestly, that pot to a creuset where you have all of your garnishes ready for the pasta and a little stock or something, you know, dump it right in there with a little bit of the well-seasoned pasta water, and
mm-hmm.
now you're cooking, and it's not a giant, something like that. I mean, that's just a big stainless steel pan.
Yeah, so I think in the end, it just comes down to, I mean, I know that the last two kitchens, that I have gotten to design for my homes, my goal was to make it work as well as I could, like a commercial kitchen, without, you know, with it still being warm and a nice place for people to be and a place people wanted to be. So I think that's your challenge is, you know, how do you take care of your family and have a space that you need and all the storage you need, et cetera, and yet be able to work at the best of your ability.
Yeah, things that I have a hard time, like when I go to my dad's, and so a regular home range, it's hard to get a good sear on. You can overload a pan if you want a good sear on a piece of fish or a piece of chicken. So if you have a large group, you have to think about other dishes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, long, slow-roasted things from your oven.
Sure.
You know, long, slow-roasted guinea fowl with, you know, garlic and rosemary or something that you just keep basting with the juice from roasting those guys. You know, the different quarters of it. that kind of thing, you can get a fantastic result from that oven. And that's not something that, because of the roasting time, you're still going to get good caramelization on the skin of the bird. That's not going to hurt that. Doing a whole roasted chicken, you can do that. I mean, taking advantage of that oven, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of times, side dishes on the top.
Yes.
While you're doing your main item, just a larger piece of beef, again, in the oven. What cuts of beef do you think are best for an oven, as opposed to?
I like prime rib. If you have a big oven, I prefer to make a prime rib on the bone because it just produces better flavor and better texture for the meat. And definitely, again, bone-in pork loin. If you can, or the rack of any basically cut of meat is nice because again, you have bones. And. And also you can make stock with those bones afterwards. I mean, there's just so much you can get out of something like that, and you can make a great sauce in those pans by deglazing those pans and adding stock that you already made from another cooking situation. And also chicken. I mean, chicken, if you can buy a really great chicken, I think it's one of the best things you can eat to feed a large family or a large group. It's not expensive, and well-roasted chicken is absolutely a delicious thing, so... With all cooking, it all starts with the quality of product.
It is harder to do seafood in those situations. Hmm. You really kind of have to do that in a heavy pan,
yeah,
on the top. But you can.
Sure.
You just can't overload pans. And one thing, like the salmon fillets, you can roast those to medium rare, and they'll rest up to medium. And you can take the chill off of, if you have to do two batches, you can take the chill, don't leave them in the oven, but you can take the chill off that first batch. That'll still have some temperature, when the other ones are have come out of the pan and are waiting to be plated.
I think shrimp are another nice thing to cook for, a good size group because it's quick. I mean, all you have to do is peel and devein them ahead of time. And, it's a four-minute cook time.
They don't want high heat anyway.
Exactly. So that's good. Okay, I will say one thing. I know scallops are a challenge for people. So with scallops, a Teflon pan is this is probably the time to use it. You can, at the restaurant, we do not use Teflon. But, as long as you have, again, in good condition stainless steel pan and on high heat with good fat, you will be able to brown them beautifully as long as they're the quality scallop that will brown. But a Teflon pan is and crab cakes, I think that's the other time, I know in my past we have used, when Teflon pans first came out.
Well, crab cakes you want to brown, but you don't want to zap it. I mean, that's...
No, but that's one of those things because it has mayonnaise in there, and if your pan's not hot and you don't have the right fat in there, they will stick to your pan. So that's probably another time that if you have Teflon pans.
It makes it pretty easy.
Yeah. And I think with eggs, it just worries me. I think a lot of people do use Teflon for that. But, you with a scrambled egg, you've really got to break up that curd. So, I don't know what you have to have.
Not a bad solution on the Teflon is Calphalon.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the coating to worry about quite as much.
Right.
Anyway, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll wrap trying to do restaurant quality food in the home kitchen. It's spring, so I'm going to give you a little quick list of rosés. And then we have a chef's challenge coming up. All of that and more on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we've been spending a little bit of time trying to talk about the different elements that make it different and make it possible to prepare restaurant quality food at home. One of the things that I think is tough is, and people will they'll see stuff, whether it's on the Food Network or they'll see these beautiful photographs and cookbooks, and the food looks great, and they think, oh, I can't make something that looks like that.
So you're talking about plating.
Yeah, I'm talking about when you decide to plate up the dish.
I think with plating, you can buy some tools, and these thankfully are not expensive. Ring molds, even if you have two or three, couple of different circle ring molds, some that are tall and some that are shorter. That's what we do in the restaurant. Oftentimes we'll mold rice or mold another type of starch or, you know, let's say I'm doing soft shell crabs with Napa cabbage slaw. I'm definitely molding that slaw because it's the only way to make it look nice. And then squirter bottles. So for your sauces, you know, just and making sure that you're very careful with the tip of a squirter bottle that you don't cut it. Sometimes they need to be cut because it's just too fine of a, yeah. So if you do, make sure you have a sharp knife and that you cut it absolutely straight. Even sometimes cooks will cut them on an angle. I'm like, okay, you're never getting a nice drop out of that. And you can buy, I mean, there's so many squirter bottles that are available. You can get little tiny dropper ones.
And that's not for making just dots. I mean, the squirter bottles is so that you can control the portioning of whatever that might be, you know, that's...
Yeah, or you can do lines of sauce or pools of sauce.
Your favorite zigzags.
Or zigzags, whatever you want. And that's the fun part of cooking is the plating part. So if you have some of those, and like I said, those are inexpensive things to have on hand. And
you got to think about the size of the main plate item mm-hmm. in the dish. And every dish does not have to be, the peas in one, the carrots in one compartment, like a kid's plate.
Right.
And the chicken in the main compartment. You know.
They used to plate in like the 70s and into the 80s. It was very much three compartment.
But it doesn't have to be. Every dish doesn't have to have a starch. Mm-mm. You know, that's you have to think about the entire meal when you're planning mm-hmm. the entire meal. I mean, maybe you have starch worked into your first course. So.
Well, and also perhaps.
Or starch is a side dish that you share.
Right. Right, which is the nice thing about cooking at home is that side dish can come out, you know, out onto the table in this wonderful casserole dish, and you don't have to put it on the plate. I mean, that's a good thing about cooking at home. You're not plating necessarily individual plates unless you are doing a dinner party and you want to, but you don't have to. Like, if I do potato gratin, that potato gratin is going into a beautiful gratin dish, and that's, you know, I'll either serve the guests at the table, pass it around, and serve it myself, or if they can handle it, they can serve themselves, but. Yeah, that's – well, and the other thing about plating is I've noticed we have a lot of great grocery stores here, and also we have a lot of great farmers markets. And you can have your own garden, and, you know, you can always pull garnish from your garden or from the market or from the grocery. I mean, I've seen flowers in the grocery here now, edible flowers.
Sometimes it's a little cost prohibitive to – you're going to go buy, you know, a package of edible flowers or something. And it's an extra $8 on your tab. That's not always, I mean, frankly, that's not that cool. You may want to think about and look for garnishes in the items that you're already preparing for the dish. You know, that's, and if you have good color in the dish itself, you may not need a whole lot of things for that plate. That's the one thing that, you know, how often does a home cook buy three things that they use a quarter of?
Mm-hmm.
And because that's the way they're packaged, and then never use the rest of it again, I bet you that happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. So there are different things, but you do want to contemplate how you're going to plate before you get to that step, especially if you're doing a dinner party.
Well, planning is a big deal,
mm-hmm.
and actually, if you're provisioning, you know, you're getting your what you want to cook. If you want main plate items, if you want. I mentioned guinea fowl. If you want a particular cut of beef, if you want fish, it's a really good idea to plan for that a little bit. Have a chat with somebody at the grocery store.
Yes. You're going to have to pre-order anything special, I'm sure.
Yeah. But you're going to spend the money anyway. So why leave it to chance? Why
not? So you're
not?
Saying think ahead, plan ahead, and be organized. But that's how you have to work in a commercial kitchen, so at all times. But the farmers markets really do open up a lot for, you know, planning now, because you can go to the market and you don't even have to think about it until you get to market. And once you see what they have, then you can sort of build around, oh my goodness, I see what's in season now, I should work with this. And then you can head to the meat department at the grocery store and say, well, I have this is where I need to go now, or seafood or whatever.
Cook what's good.
Exactly. Cook what's now and good.
So.
All right. So what rosés do you like right now?
Oh, yeah, it's spring. I think people want rosé for their drinking needs in the spring. And there's a bunch. I mean, you want 2016s. You want things that are fresh and nice and charming. There are rosé bottlings that, frankly, are a little bit sweet, and it's if you want something sweet, that's a different thing. A couple of recommendations: a Washington State winery, Airfield, does delicious rosé and has a good body to it. Mm. Most West Coast rosés, you expect them to have a little body to them. Sancerre Rosé, if you want really a first-class rosé, and if you want one that's a little more interesting, has a little more bouquet, Sancerre Rosé, usually it's a year older, and that's kind of if you're trying to be the rosé sophisticate. If you want to be fancy rosé, people always think French rosé, and the producers for that are Tompier, down along the Mediterranean and very close to the Mediterranean, Chateau Simon. Those are the break the bank, impress everybody rosés, if you want to do that. But two little picks that I always like from down there. One, Chateau de la Bargemone. It has a big, elaborate, tan-colored label. Bargemone is B-A-R-G-E-M-O-N-E. Bargemone has been consistently excellent for a number of years, and that's largely Grenache. That's dry, clean, strawberries, you know, bright, fresh, way too quaffable. And another producer that's much less known, Chateau de Lancire. This is a producer from Pixonloup, also in the south of France. And there's a decent amount of Syrah in that one. It has a little bit darker flavors and aromas, and but and also firm and clean. That does well with a lot of different food. And a bargain pick from Argentina, El Libre. That's right. The freedom. The freedom to spend under $10 for a bottle of wine.
There you go. Sounds good.
The that stuff is pretty darn delicious. And the thing to remember about South American wines is they're always going to be 6 months older. They were harvested in the spring.
There you go.
Because their seasons are the opposite of ours.
Good point. All right.
So beware of that.
That's
if you
exciting.
If you want to drink rosé in the fall, drink the stuff from South America.
Okay.
So are you ready for Chef's Challenge?
I am. Let's have it.
I know you were trying to rip it out of my hands.
I just thought you were handing it to me.
All those paper noises, listeners.
Oh, look, you gave me a bone-in pork rack. Chickpeas. I love dried chickpeas. Oregano, dried tomatoes, garlic, shallot, onion, asparagus, mint, fresh mozzarella, fresh fava beans, Calabrian chili oil. Oh, this is yummy. Good list, Tony.
So what are you going to make?
I'm
hungry, so the list usually is better when I'm hungry, and I'm not trying to get you to cook hot dogs.
The chickpeas need to start cooking because they take a long time. So saute a little bit of onion, shallot, and gently add, saute the garlic at the end. I don't have any stock, so I will add water and a little bit of the dried.
A lot of people don't have any stock.
Yeah, a little bit of the dried oregano. And I'm going to put some of the dried tomatoes in as well. And that will really perfume that as it cooks, and a little bit of the Calabrian chili oil in as well to flavor it.
If you want, you can borrow one item from a neighbor in this chef challenge.
One item from my neighbor?
Yeah, you can borrow one item from your neighbor.
Okay, good.
That should be a new rule in the chef challenge.
Okay. All right, so the chickpeas are cooking, and I have asparagus, mint, mozzarella, fava beans. So I'm going to make a salad. While the chickpeas are cooking, I need to get the pork in the oven. So it's a bone-in pork rack. A little bit of salt and pepper and corn oil on the pork rack, and I'm going to rub that in there a couple of times to make sure it really is well seasoned. And I'm going to
A deep tissue massage for the pork rack with salt.
I'm going to put it in an oven at 425 degrees for 15 minutes, and then back it down to just right under 300, and roast that very slowly. And we'll keep an eye on it to make sure it is getting good color. And if it is, great. If it's getting too much color, I'll put foil over it and just let it just let it go. And it shouldn't get too much color at such a low temperature to roast. And roast that until it's medium, nice pink and tender. And obviously let that rest when it comes out of the oven. And I'll slice it through the bone and serve it as chops. Meanwhile, I'm going to cook the asparagus and the fava beans. So fava beans go into salted water, highly salted boiling water. And once they blanch, and you want to just barely cook them because your goal is to loosen up that skin on the outside and to peel them. So just cook them probably for about 3 minutes in the boiling water, and then shock them in ice water to stop the cooking process, peel them, and put those aside, and then blanch the asparagus. And since I have mint, and that's the only thing I haven't used yet, and I don't have any olive oil. Do I have any olive oil?
Okay. Borrowed from a neighbor.
I'm going to borrow olive oil, which an extra virgin olive oil, and just lightly dress the asparagus, the fava beans, and make a salad with a chiffonade of mint, which is just a very fine chop of mint, slice of mint, really, and lay out buffalo mozzarella underneath it, put the vegetables, the asparagus, and the favas over the top, and extra virgin olive oil, salt and pepper, and that little bit of mint, and that will be really pretty.
You could drink one of those nice bottles of rosé.
Okay.
With that. The people are always asking about white or red for port. You can do it. You can definitely do either, but rosé this time of the year, why not? Okay.
Your turn, Tony.
All right, let me get my glasses on. See what you've written. It's very small. Asparagus, soft shells, whales. It is the size of the soft shell. It is not whale blubber. Butter, extra virgin olive oil, whales, lemon, ramps, strawberry, Reggiano, butter lettuce, lima beans, chicken breast, chicken stock. Okay.
Right.
Do I have a little bit of, I'm going to borrow some cream from a neighbor.
Okay.
And make a cream sauce with the Parmigiano and a little bit of lemon. And I'm going to reserve that and have that with the chicken breast. I'm going to sear the chicken breast off on the range. I'm going to finish them in the oven to keep them kind of nice and juicy, and I can rebaste them in just in their own juice a little bit. And when I go to plate them, I'll plate them with that Parmigiano cream. The asparagus and the soft shells, I like asparagus with soft shells. I usually don't like asparagus with a whole lot of other stuff. But it's hard to fry at home. That's one thing. We keep coming up with uses for Teflon pans. I might use a Teflon pan to, at relatively high heat, for soft shells.
To saute it, you mean?
To saute them, yeah. They don't need a tremendous amount of salt, like most things from the sea. These are big soft shells, so if you want them crispy on the outside and to be warm, they may just need to slide in the oven for a few moments. The asparagus, I would just blanch, and, I wish I had some tarragon for the soft shells and the asparagus. The butter I would brown on top of the range and use a little bit of that brown butter for the soft shells and the asparagus. And what else? Butter, lettuce, and lima beans, strawberries. Strawberries are dessert, sorry. Just, they were like 2 weeks away from fresh strawberries.
It's exciting.
And yeah, I would
can't
just
wait.
Just slice them first, macerate them in their own juice and a little bit of sugar. Mm-hmm. And let them work a little bit, and they'll be fine and dandy. You can do other stuff with them, but if you have any more of that cream left, you can whip it.
When I was a kid, we would pour milk over them when they first came in.
The lima beans, yeah, I would blanch those guys and slide them underneath the chicken breast with the Reggiano cream, and I think that's everything except for the chicken stock, which I will save for another time.
Okay.
So that's all of that. I think that's all we have time for on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
If you would like to listen to this program or any other program on our podcast, you can go to the WYPR site and look up the Foreman & Wolf page. That's WYPR.org. And you can download the program that you want to listen to. If you'd like to send us questions or comments, please email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf and on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
Yeah, I'm the real Tony Foreman on Instagram.
That always makes me laugh.
Well, because it's it's pretty cute, isn't it?
Oh, it's adorable.
Well,
okay.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
And have a great Sunday.